We have, this is Bruce Byrock and Juno at Ways and Means, and we have three folks online, Steve Borrell, Dick Milius, and Rick Van Nuha.
I don't have any other committee going.
And I just wanted to let you know that we're waiting for a quorum. So as soon as we get a quorum, we'll convene the meeting. So we'll go off, we'll take an at ease.
So I've got to leave at some point here.
Yeah, we're online. Okay, the House State Affairs Committee on Ways and Means will come to, excuse me, House Special Committee on Ways and Means will come to order. President Representative Seaton, Representative Moses, Representative Grunberg, and myself. It's February 24th, 2006, and we're going to be continuing to take testimony on House Bill 418. We have some folks signed up in the audience to testify. We will get to you today, and we have some folks online. We will take your testimony today. And just for your information, we will adjourn this meeting no later than 10 a.m. So we did have Representative Seaton, who had some additional information he wanted to present on the bill. And with Representative Seaton is his staff, Ian Lang, who's a witness stand. So Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the last meeting, there were several questions.
We're joined by Representative Wilson. Thank you.
There were several questions and requests for some additional information. So we updated that information with those things. There's a few other tidbits that are coming, but we haven't been able to pull all of those together yet. But if it'd be okay, I'd like Ian to go through the update of the charts and present.
In your previous packet, you had a...
Mr. Lang.
I'm sorry. My name is Ian Lang, Staff Representative Paul Seaton. In your previous packets, you had a chart which had a comparison of international taxes with regards to the mining industry. And we have updated that. The main sections of change are in the Alaska and Alaska proposed. We've included the corporate taxes and some other duties, as well as Canada, which I added in all the different provincial taxes and ranking according to the Fraser study, which was also included in your previous packet, as well as the corresponding notes. In addition to that chart, we put together a comparison of state taxes. And
is that a separate chart?
It is a separate chart.
Is it stapled together?
I don't believe so.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. It is.
Just I'm looking.
Oh, I see. One is an international perspective, and one is a U.S. perspective.
Right.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I might just say for... In your packet, you might want to, you'll notice it has a 2/24 date at the bottom of this revised chart. Mm-hmm. So you might want to, so that way you can identify from the other one, which wasn't dated. So this is the updated chart.
So we should toss the other one?
Yeah, you can toss the other one.
Right. If we.
And in addition to those two charts, yes. We distributed a...
Just a sec, Representative Grunberg?
Sure.
No,
okay.
I was talking to Jenny.
Okay, Mr. Lane.
In addition to those charts, we distributed a... comparison of the top metal producers both in the U.S. and worldwide, and that's just a single sheet. But it should be noted, however, that this is just for general comparison purposes only, and the rankings can change from year to year and may not necessarily be exactly accurate, but these are considered to be the top producing states and nations of those particular minerals.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd like to everybody to recall, if you look at the table, it's a tax metal mine taxation comparison of all taxes by states, and that shows state in the upper left-hand corner there. That second column is the investment attractiveness ranking, and that's, remember, by the Fraser Institute, and we have that whole study if anybody wants it, and it's thick, and it's got graphs on every conceivable measurement that you want to think about as far as attractiveness or disincentives for four different things, but you can also see the attractiveness ratings there are listed as far as other states, and Nevada is one, we're six, and you see most of the states are in the 40s or 50s, 30s, so we're far more attractive in, for many reasons.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. Maybe I could ask Mr. Lang or the representative, either one, to answer these questions. I would very much like to see, in the Fraser study, that's the Fraser study, do they have a chart like this or anything like this?
Are you referring to the state tax comparisons?
Yeah.
No. They do, however, have charts which talk about the tax regimes in different states and countries and those effects on their attraction for investment.
I would like it if I could at least, if you could let me look at that.
Sure, and I believe we actually distributed that in your previous packets. There's some excerpts from the Fraser study, and I believe those charts are included. Yeah.
Follow-up, Representative Grunberg.
I'm slightly disorganized. I don't seem to see that.
There's a lot.
We can talk afterwards, but I really would like to see the comparison. I just, for your information, I always find it really helpful to see how other states and other jurisdictions have handled similar problems. That guides me in my thinking on legislation generally.
Certainly, and that's what we intended here with these charts, still to show that, and they do show the overall taxes in different states and nations, as well as the specific mining taxes, and whether those are based on net or gross or otherwise.
If I could, Mr. Chair, are there certain factors that we could compare and how those factors and the manipulation of those particular factors influence, here we're talking about attractiveness, maybe we could scale it against other kinds of things like revenue raising and stuff like that. But so we can qualify it as well as quantify it.
Yes. In fact, that was the intent of distributing this Fraser study. And we tried to pare it down because there's a tremendous amount of information included in the study. But we have the general assemblage of information we've distributed is comprised of the different taxes in our state for the major resource industries, the different mining-specific taxes in different nations and different states, and then with respects to investment attractiveness to the mining industry, all the different factors that are considered, and then how those weigh in overall with respect to those different states. And we have a lot more specific areas if you'd like to see more parts of the Fraser study.
I'd just like, we can talk about that.
Sure.
That'd be great. Thank you. Very helpful.
Mr. Lang, Representative C, did you have a follow-up on that at all?
No, that's fine. We'll just make sure that he has access to all of the components of the study.
Mr. Lang, if you could stay with us and step back, please, and take any notes related to testimony that's going to be on this bill. We'll probably have some follow-up questions for the sponsor. And at this time, I would like to go to the folks who've taken time out of their day to testify on the bill. And we'll start with Juneau and then go off net and then come back to Juneau and then go off net. Mr. High, Council of Alaska Producers. Your handwriting's like mine. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Do you want to give your name and affiliation
to
the record and then give your testimony?
Okay. My name is Rich High. I'm Vice President of the Council of Alaska Producers. I'm also General Manager of Greens Creek Mining Company on Admiralty Island.
Can I ask you just a brief question? What is the Council of Alaska Producers?
The Council of Alaska Producers is an association of representing companies involved in exploration, development, and active operation, generally of hard rock.
That's part of your testimony.
Mine. Okay. I will leave that out of the first paragraph
Go
of my
ahead.
Testimony.
Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to speak on House Bill 418. As I said, my name is Rich High. I'm Vice President of the Council of Alaska Producers. I have with me a letter from our president, Carl Hahnemann, and I would like to read that testimony. Following that testimony, I also have some comments that I would like to express myself. I mentioned the Council of Alaska Producers, the organization that it is.
Is that a part of the record, that letter?
Yes, I have copies to distribute.
We'll make it part of the record as well.
Okay.
How lengthy is the letter, Mr. High?
Page and a half. Okay. The mining industry has worked hard with the legislature over the last two decades to improve the investment and regulatory climate in Alaska. Significant fiscal policy improvements, such as the exemption of minerals from municipal in-situ taxation and the passage of the Exploration Incentive Act, both of which passed through this committee, have combined with other regulatory changes to greatly improve the perception of Alaska as a good place to do business. In fact, for several years after the passage of the Exploration Incentives Act, members of the council and of and other mining company executives often cited the Incentive Act in speeches around North America as a reflection of the positive support from the Alaska government. House Bill 418 would undermine these efforts by imposing a complicated and regressive tax on an industry that is yet to reach its potential in Alaska. A stable and fair tax policy is necessary to continue to attract investment capital. The existing tax regime, which combines corporate income taxes, a 7% net profits mining license tax, rents, and the 3% net profits royalty discussed here, was established after years of litigation on the issue of what constituted an equitable return to the state of Alaska. Poorly crafted and ill-advised legislation is a poor substitute for the extensive legal and public process that established the current tax regime. Tax payments from the mining industry to the state are up significantly in recent years, even though Alaska still only has one hard rock mine on state land. The legislature has worked hard to provide a stable climate for investment. The Council of Alaska Producers asks that you not pass House Bill 418 and allow the industry to grow and reach its potential. Those are comments from Carl Hahnemann, the president of the Council of Alaska Producers. He was unable to make it today. If I could make some comments myself. I listened in on the committee meeting on Wednesday, and I apologize for not being here, but the phone connection wasn't as good as I would like it to have been, so I didn't quite hear everything that went back and forth. But I did listen to the comments that were made pertaining to the Fraser Institute, the survey on mining companies, and I agree over time that the results show that Alaska has improved the climate dramatically for mineral development, and that's happened over the last couple of decades. And we need to continue to allow that potential to grow. A tax like this, what I believe is a regressive tax at a time when the industry is still emerging from difficult times, will not support continued growth. I believe the state of Alaska, and corrected in today's meeting, was compared to numerous countries on Wednesday. I believe it was unfair comparison, especially when you're comparing a state to numerous countries around the world. And thank you for correcting that information today. It's difficult to compare without knowing the types of things that occur in the other countries. Are there social benefits provided from taxes versus medical and retirement benefits provided by the company support? Those kind of things. It's hard to make a comparison without knowing the overall tax infrastructure and what those taxes pay for in other countries. There was a fair amount of time spent comparing the tax industry of mining to the fishing industry, and as a natural resource, the mining industry is fully supportive of the fishing industry, as well as oil and gas and others in the state of Alaska. But we should remember also that when a mining industry has to develop a property in Alaska, it is difficult to do so because of the lack of infrastructure that exists in being able to develop properties. That's seen right now by Donlin Creek, looking at their property, what Pogo had to do to put their project together, what Greens Creek did 15 years ago from a roads and standpoint and lack of power. And some of these infrastructure issues are ones that the fishing industry may not see as detriments to developing their industry like the mining industry does. I believe Representative Seaton again discussed on Wednesday the shifting of revenues, and that was raised in the meeting on Wednesday. I was in the meeting a year ago when that was also discussed. I think I know what Representative Seaton is referring to when he discusses shifting of revenues. I also believe that that is not not allowed by the Department of Revenue, and they have mechanisms in place to prevent shifting of revenues. So I'm still struggling a bit as far as understanding exactly what you're referring to. And if this is such a concern, I would expect that we could provide the factual examples that exist to support the concern for shifting of revenues. Lastly, I was the person that Representative Seaton referred to on Wednesday. I appreciate the promotion to president instead of general manager of Greens Creek, but I was the person that Representative Seaton referred to from Greens Creek when he discussed the fact that Greens Creek has not paid its net island royalty to the U.S. Forest Service based on the tax structure that exists. I did state a year ago that Greens Creek has not paid any funds against the net island royalty. However, we have not avoided nor attempted to avoid the net island royalty payments. Simply put, and what I said last year, is that we have not mined in any areas that are subjected to the net island royalty under the agreement from the late 90s when the net island royalty was put in place. We have not mined in any areas that are susceptible to the net island royalty. One last comment. I'm just glancing at the information that was provided today, and I believe for the record in the total metal producers, United States and worldwide, Alaska is noted as the largest silver producer in the states. That is primarily Greens Creek is the largest producer of silver in the United States, and we're very proud to be the largest silver producer in the United States. However, I would mention that the statement that it's in metric tons, I believe, is in error. I believe it would be closer to 559,000 kilograms produced instead of metric tons. So we may want to check those numbers. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. Appreciate the time. And again, I urge you not to pass House Bill 418 out of this committee.
Okay, a couple of questions, Mr. Heim, by the yes. committee. First of all, for Mr. Dick from Department of Revenue Tax Division, I will have some questions on the shifting of revenues issue. So just okay. so you know, Mr. Dick. And you mentioned, Mr. Heim, that Greens Creek hasn't paid any funds against it's the net. Island royalty, is that three words?
Net island royalty, three words.
Is that a federal program?
That's a federal program administered under BLM, but we are on U.S. Forest Service lands. It pertains to a royalty on properties if we mine outside of our existing extralateral rights within our mining area.
I see.
So in the land exchange agreement in the late 1990s, that was part of that agreement.
So you can't just shaft underneath?
No.
That's the point. No. When you say you have not mined in areas that are susceptible to the net island royalty, is that because of the tax or because there's no resource to mine?
It's not because of the tax, and we hope there are resources to mine, and we find them in our exploration program. It's just the way that the structure was designed as far as what is susceptible to net island royalty and what is not susceptible to net island royalty, and that gets into a discussion on extension of extralateral rights from existing claims. So it's a fairly detailed discussion.
But the point of my question was is the net island royalty has not provided a disincentive to your mining. It's the fact that there's no resource to mine.
There may be a resource to mine. We have not finished our exploration in all directions underground.
All right. Any questions? Representative Broomberg and Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I appreciate your coming by. How do you spell your last name?
H-E-I-G.
Okay, thank you. Now, first, very basic. How many kilograms in a metric ton? I'm trying to
sure.
put, you know, to figure out.
I will give you a number, and then we'll have to work from there. There is 31.10348 grams per troy ounce.
Oh, we can go to this.
Like, and then
I'm
we'll
not
going
to get into grams.
Okay, it's about 1,000.
About 1,000.
How many Academy Awards?
So the worldwide ranking is at about 1,000 to 1 here.
The 559,000 metric tons, I believe in the calculation, if that was kilograms, would be about 17 million ounces, although Greens Creek does not produce that amount of.
But no, you were talking about kilograms on the left. In Alaska, how many silver mines are there currently producing? Just the one?
Ours is the only as a primary producer of silver. There may be byproduct silver credits from some of the other operations.
Okay. And are there other silver mines coming online in Alaska?
None that I'm aware of as primary producers. If you take a look at a project such as Pebble, they may produce some silver as a byproduct.
But not primary?
Correct.
Okay. Are there things that are different about the silver mining industry vis-a-vis taxing as compared to other hard minerals? You have specific different processes or anything that we should look at your industry different from other hard rock mining like gold and stuff like that from a taxing point of view?
I need to comment on the type of process that our process is at Greens Creek. We don't produce silver as a bar of silver similar to an operation. Our silver is contained in concentrates, zinc and lead concentrates, that are sold as a concentrate to smelters around the world.
I see.
So it's more of a concentrate production, different than a Fairbanks Gold or a Pogo from the standpoint of developing of a gold doré or a silver bar.
I'm not at all familiar with the industry, and I think personally, when I'm looking at taxing, I have to know something about the industry to know how it works before we make an intelligent decision. That's why I'm asking, because I'm very ignorant on the subject. Okay. And I don't know, I don't want to take the committee's time if people...
Why don't we move on, and Representative Seaton, you had a question.
Yeah, I just wanted to let everyone know that, you know, on the tax structure that we have, and if cost shifting takes place, and we have a letter from Department of Revenue saying that they're, you know, it's very hard for them to track. It may be taking place, but they don't do the kind of audits that would establish that. But I just want to make everyone aware that I am not saying that the mining industry is doing anything wrong. We established the tax policy, and if you guys follow the tax policy and it does not give us a reasonable return, and that's our fault. That's not. I do not blame mining industry or any other industry for following the tax policy to the full advantage that they can within the state of Alaska. And so I just wanted to put that on the record, Mr. Chairman, that I'm not accusing anybody of doing anything nefarious.
Yeah, thank you.
We all engage in maximizing tax avoidance, all of us.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Mr. High, for coming forward.
Thank you. Thank you, committee members.
Why don't we go online and to Nova Gold Resources. We have Rick Van Nieuwenhuy.
Yes, hello. This is Rick Van Nieuwenhuy. Can you all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak today at the regarding House Bill 418.
Mr. Nieuwenhuy? Could you do me a favor? Give your name and an association so we have it correct for the record, and then you can go ahead and talk about the bill.
Understood. My name is Rick Van Nieuwenhuyse. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of Nova Gold Resources, Inc. Our home base here is in Vancouver, British Columbia. Again, thank you for the opportunity to speak. Nova Gold is a junior exploration and mining company. We have invested some $25 million in Alaska over the last 5 or 6 years. I grew up in Alaska. I spent a good part of my career working in Alaska for a number of companies over the years. And when I had the opportunity to form my own company, I did so about seven years ago. We've now put in, as I said, about $25 million of our own investment in Alaska. We have three projects that we're working on. And with our joint venture partners at Donlin Creek, which is Placer Dome and Barrick, and our joint venture partner Rio Tinto Zinc, which are also the operators of the Greens Creek mine that you just heard of from Rich Heil. Collectively, all three of us now have expended about $100 million in Alaska to develop these three mineral deposits, and they include the Rock Creek property in Nome, the huge Donlin Creek gold project in southwestern Alaska on native lands owned by the Chulitza Native Corporation, and the surface rights owned by the Kuskokwim Corporation. And the third project is the Arctic project in joint venture with Rio Tinto, located in a northwest Arctic borough, adjacent to lands owned by the state of Alaska and also lands owned by Nano Regional Corporation. I mention those because all three of those projects we have spent, as I said, about $100 million with our partners on, and we have yet to have any return of our investment, or our investors have not had a return on their investment. A tax such as is proposed in House Bill 418 is what I would consider an extremely regressive tax. When my investors have, myself and my investors have invested $100 million and we have yet to have any return on investment, to have to pay something out over the top seems incredibly unfair when you change the level, the playing field at this date. There is already a tax on mining in Alaska. It's a 7% net profits tax, which I believe is the correct kind of a tax to apply to the mining industry. I think it's very unfair to have a tax to come off of the top because specifically in Alaska there's a huge amount of capital investment that must be invested to be able to develop these any of these mines because obviously there is no infrastructure and there's no central power grid. So the lack of roads and the lack of power make the cost of developing a mine in Alaska very high, and to be paying out money before your investors are getting a return on their investment, I believe, is very unfair. This would send a very negative message to the rest of the mining industry worldwide, and the mining industry is a worldwide industry. I think Alaska has come a long ways. As I said, I grew up in Alaska. I tried to work in Alaska in the 80s and basically was, if I wanted to develop my career, I was forced to go outside of Alaska because there was not a heck of a lot going on in Alaska through the 80s. Late 70s and 80s. As soon as I could, I returned. I think Alaska's come a long way on developing good, stable policies for mineral investment, and I'd hate to see such a tax as envisioned by House Bill 418 be applied to the industry. I think it would send a very, very negative message. I think that's all I have to say. Just to wind up, I would very, very strongly urge the committee to put a no vote on House Bill 418. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nieuwenhuyse. I wondered, what is Nova Gold's affiliation with Alaska mining? Where do you fit in the picture? Your company out of Vancouver.
We own the Alaska Gold Company, which is a gold company that's historically been in business since the 1920s in the Nome area of Alaska. We purchased that company about six years ago. And so we have been operating a sand and gravel business in the Nome area and developing the Rock Creek Mine, which is will be Nome's first modern open pit hard rock mine. It'll produce about 100,000 ounces of gold and will employ about 135 people. We're currently in the permitting process and expect to have our permits issued by June of this year, May or June of this year, and in time for the construction season. We hope to have our first gold pour by the end of the year. As I said, we've, along with our other two projects in Alaska that we're spending a fair bit of money on, including Donlin Creek, which is one of the largest gold projects, undeveloped gold projects in the world at 28 million ounces, and our Arctic deposit, which is a copper lead zinc deposit in the Northwest Arctic Borough. We're developing that, investing. We've spent already about $5 million, and our budget this year is an additional $3 million. This is a joint venture with Rio Tinto, again, the operators of the Greens Creek mine.
Okay. Any questions by Committee Representative Seaton?
Thank you. Just a first of all, point of clarification. It sounded you were saying over the top of other taxes. I hope you realize that this tax replaces the current mineral license tax, our mine license tax, so that it's not on in addition. And also, this is basically a net smelter return, so it's not before you were in production, and it's not before there are returns to you. And also, I presume that you've seen the provision in there for a three-year deferral of taxes that would allow you to recover and your investors to recover in the first 3 years of production more capital. So if you haven't seen those provisions, I'd just like to draw your attention to them. But I guess you do business in Canada as well, is that correct?
We have several big projects in Canada as well, both in British Columbia and the Yukon. But if I could just make a comment, when you're investing, in the case of Donlin Creek, $1.5 billion, and that's a rough number, that's the investment that will have to be made to extract the first ounce of gold out of that project. The tax bill as it's written, although I have read the bill, I find it quite difficult to read, to be honest with you. A three-year tax holiday is not going to go a long way to paying off $1.5 billion. And I disagree strongly with your statement that our investors would get a return. A project like Donlin will take probably 5 years to return to return the capital invested. And I do understand it's not over the top of the existing net profits interest tax that is in existence, which I believe is a good tax. I guess my recommendation is it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well,
it's a good tax. That's new testimony for this committee. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. I guess what I'd like to do is refer back to the information we have from James Otto's study there, the Global Mining Taxation Comparative Study, the charts we have showing Canada having a corporate tax rate of 38% less provincial abatements, but generally come out at that range. And then on top of that, it's a 10 to 18% of profits in all provinces and a minimum tax in some provinces established through a net smelter return equivalent or a gross tax, and we list those in here from that taxation comparison study of British Columbia having on top of the corporate a 2% net smelter return, Alberta 1% of the gross, New Brunswick 2% net, similar to a net smelter return, Nova Scotia 2% of net, Quebec, those are the provincial corporate tax rate beyond that, but those were all net smelter return taxes that were minimums in addition two, but we're, you know, we're not displacing the 10 to 18% of all profits in the provinces. How do you want to compare those to our situation where we have the corporate taxes and with this proposals to have a 3% net smelter return is with you know, some minimums and threshold levels?
If that's a question to me, the first of all, in British Columbia, it is a net profits based tax. It's not a net smelter based tax. And British Columbia has some of the cheapest power in the world, and so that's part of where we pay a corporate tax here. That's part of where that money goes, is to provide among the cheapest power in the world. BC Hydro will supply power for 3.2 cents a kilowatt hour. So when Alaska can compare to that to provide power, when I look at a project like Donovan Creek, it's going to probably cost me somewhere in the 10 to 11 cent range for kilowatt hour to produce my own power on site. Then you know you begin to see the differential that there is between even places as similar as Alaska and BC in terms of the lack of infrastructure in Alaska and a tax such as a gross royalty tax that's been has been proposed would be again very detrimental to encouraging investment in a yet young industry in Alaska.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to clarify that you'll see that from the chart of this comparative study of taxation, British Columbia has a tax rate, a profits tax of 13%, considerably above ours. And also, it has a minimum tax, which is the 2% is similar to net smelter return calculation. That's used so that that's a minimum tax where we have no minimum tax, and their tax rates are considerably higher than ours, as well as their corporate tax rate being higher.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rick, this is Peggy Wilson. I have a question for you. I know that you get your power very cheap in BC, but there's a lot of exploration going on in northern BC, and from what I'm hearing, there's going to be a real shortage of power up in that area. How is that going to affect? Do you have anything up in that in the northern BC?
Well, one of the things that the in fact, our big project Galore Creek is in northern British Columbia, and it's a large copper gold project that would produce a concentrate somewhat similar to what is produced at Red Dog and is produced at Greens Creek. And then you'd have to ship this concentrate then to smelters overseas. So in this process requires a very significant amount of power. You're quite right. Northern BC does not have a tremendous amount of power available, and that's one of the things that the British Columbia government is currently addressing by putting in about a 200-kilometer long power line into northern BC. They've not committed to do that, but it's something that the British Columbia government, the Tahltan First Nation, and industry are working together to achieve. And again, once that capital for that infrastructure were put in, which again the BC government is contemplating doing that themselves, then you would have access then to the relatively inexpensive BC hydro power rates.
Oh, okay, thank you. Because I knew that they're having difficulty because of the expense of that line, and so there's really questions about that. I was just wondering where you were at with that. Thank you.
You bet.
Okay, there are further questions, committee. If you have questions of Mr. Nauerhaus, I know I'm butchering that. Representative Seaton, why don't we go ahead? If you don't, let's take further testimony. Further questions to the witness? Thank you. Thank you, sir, for your time this morning.
Thank you for the opportunity to give my presentation.
Sure.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
You brought up some issues that I had been thinking about, and that is that Alaska's mining industry, at least insofar as your company is concerned, is in the developmental stage rather than the producing stage. So we don't have the infrastructure some of these other jurisdictions have. And that's a factual difference between Alaska and other places. Am I right in understanding that's what your testimony has been so far?
That's correct. That the I think in Alaska, the mining industry, in Alaska is very young. There's very, very few mines. I mean, I was chuckling to myself when Rich was trying to think of the second mine in Alaska that produces silver, because the fact is that there aren't any. Not because there's no potential, but because there just hasn't been a lot of work done on developing other mines in Alaska. We're a very young industry in Alaska, and it is very high cost because of the lack of infrastructure. So it is a very significant part of the development stage of for the state to attract new industry, having good taxes that recognizes the hurdles that exist in the state would be, I think, appropriate.
The earlier charts and things don't seem to break it down with that factual distinction in mind. And it might be helpful to us to see how other jurisdictions that are in a similar historical place raise their revenue, how they partner with the industries so that the industry can grow and so that the government can get sufficient royalty and taxes to maintain itself too, also in that manner. And so I would be most interested if you and the other folks from the industry, and I'm also looking at the bill sponsor and his staff, can see how similar jurisdictions that are in the developing stage, how they handle this issue. Do you have any words of wisdom on that?
I don't have any charts or anything that I can quote or figures that I can quote to, but I can certainly commit to look into that on a comparative basis and try to be fair and objective to provide that information.
That would be helpful to me, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks. If you could provide that, it would be great. I appreciate it.
Done.
Anything else from the committee? Okay, we have, thank you again for your testimony. Steve Burrell with the Alaska Miners Association. Mr. Burrell, can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Steve Burrell, Executive Director of Alaska Miners Association, and I'm testifying on behalf of the association.
And your letter has been made part of the record, Mr. Burrell.
Say again?
Your letter has been made part of the record.
Okay, thank you very much. I won't, if you have that letter there, I won't go through that letter in detail, but I would touch on a few of the points there and a few of the other items that have come up here in the previous hearing. We are very concerned about this bill. We're concerned about the proposed changes in tax policy, and we're likewise concerned about the timing of this proposal. We have been working extremely hard since the D2 lands debate and ANILCA to convince mining companies that they should consider investing in Alaska. At that time, I believe the number was something like 80 different companies. Either if they had an office here, they closed their doors, and others that had been looking in Alaska just kind of walked away because of the uncertainty. And we've been trying to convince them for these intervening years to come back that they should consider investing in Alaska. Similarly, previous legislatures and administrations have, oftentimes repeated the mantra that Alaska's open for business. Some companies heard this statement and believed it and responded by investing, Nova Gold being one of those. Even during periods of low metal prices, some of the companies continued investing and continued risking their very limited exploration dollars here. Today we're at a very unique time in history. Precious metals prices are elevated. base metal prices are elevated and coal is elevated all at the same time. And I've challenged a lot of people to tell me if this has ever existed before, and no one can point to a time when that was the case, when all three of those major mining sectors, if you will, have been high at the same time. For most of the past 20 years, the mining industry worldwide has been suffering under very low prices. Many operations have been losing money. In our letter, we pointed out that Alaska already has a special targeted tax on all minerals produced, that being the mining license tax. It is a progressive form of taxation based on the net proceeds from mineral production. When the miner is successful, the state shares in that success. In addition, the state also charges a rent on mining claims and a royalty on mineral production from state-owned land. We believe that once the 2005 data is available, that it'll show significantly increased payments to the state general fund, and that's with only four large operating mines during 2005. Right now, we have a fifth. Pogo is in operation, and as a previous speaker mentioned, we now have two large mines, if you will, on state land. Greens Creek is on federal land. Red Dog is on private land. Fort Knox is on mental health trust lands, which of course is a type of state land, but the general fund does not see the payments from Fort Knox. These companies have been either at a loss, operating at a loss, or right on the margin for many years. Right now, they've been providing some of the best jobs in the state. They've been providing some of the only private sector jobs in rural Alaska, and paying local property taxes that have been essential for the communities. I was disappointed with the analysis that was provided to the committee the other day, and I just saw that this multi-page packet of information. In there it makes a comment that only, I don't know how many million dollars it was or how many hundreds of thousand dollars it was, came in various tax forms, and yet it didn't mention that there was only the one large large mine on state land, and being Usabelli at that point. And so I felt that the data that was included in that was presented in a less than straightforward way. I'll just leave it at that. The issue of appropriate levels of taxation for mining has been debated, and during the 1980s, just about the whole decade of the 80s, and this was at a time when there were no hard rock mines operating in the state of Alaska. Greens Creek and Red Dog both began in 1989. But the debate over, appropriate taxation took place before that. And that was, of course, Red Dog and Greens Creek weren't yet in operation, and, of course, Fort Knox and Pogo. But establishing a stable and appropriately progressive tax in advance of investment was a good policy. And companies have looked at that, and they've said, hey, this is a place that we're hopeful we can build a mine. Along with other legislative efforts, including the exploration incentives credit, it's helped set the stage to attract significant risk capital to Alaska that now is beginning to mature into a core business.
Mr. Burrell?
Pardon?
Mr. Burrell?
Yes.
Could you do me a favor?
Yes.
Could you join us Monday again?
I can try. My flight is right now headed for Juneau at that time. I'd come in, have to come in Sunday night.
Well, what we're going to do is, are you going to be here Wednesday?
Uh, No, I have to speak at a conference in Anchorage Wednesday.
Well, in other words, we have to adjourn now. It's almost a minute till 10, and we
okay.
We have to adjourn.
I'll change my flight, and I'll be there on Monday morning.
What we'd like to do is we're going to take other bills previously heard next week, including HB 418, beginning Monday morning, and we'd like to. I apologize for being rude and interrupting you, but we have to adjourn.
Okay.
But we haven't got through your testimony. We have questions of you, and we have some folks from the state that want to testify as well. So we're going to continue your testimony on Monday morning, okay?
Thank you.
All right, committee's adjourned.
Amen.